and not much attention from the police department and the press.
Before we go from Gideon, here's a little bit more of dialogue in front of the city hall at the City Hall Sleepers vigil, giving an instance, an example of what police do there. Here are the protesters describing what happened the evening after the City Hall Sleepers did their demonstration, the chain gang sleep protest.
We were all sitting here and stuff.
Chad speaking.
And that one cop comes up to him and threw him on the ground the other week.
Officer Abel?
Yeah, he comes up. And he comes out and stands right there and looks around. Looks looking for something to fuck with us about. So he sees a sign sitting over there on the ground. So he says, who's it is? And John says, they're all criminals. So he says, you get a ticket.
Okay, which John are we talking about?
This is John Leslie.
John Leslie.
Hey,
Bob, this is okay, so what are the signs? How many signs did he take?
Approximately 32 signs.
What did these signs say?
Legalize sleep, decriminalize the ban.
Did he ask him to pick them up or did he just take them?
Just took them.
Okay, And then he gave John a ticket for sitting on the wall, two different tickets?
I didn't send him the ticket for sitting on the wall, so I'm going to take him up for a... The signs in the morning came up. He was looking for something to fuck with us about.
By what time did he get the ticket for the signs?
It must have been about 7:30, 8 o'clock.
And who else was around?
Me, these two, and him, and John Leslie, and Forrest.
Forrest is their son, their 4 or 5 year old son, 3 or 4 year old son. Now, Liz, you said there was tickets given for the same man later today, a couple of hours ago?
Yeah, for sitting on the wall.
And which officer gave it?
Crane.
Sergeant Andy Crane?
Oh, no, actually, you know what? It was the other guy. Sorry.
Officer Evelyn?
Evelyn. And Crane just came out here to come and get our food.
So it seems like there's something of a crackdown happening here.
Oh, yeah. And pretty soon they're going to have, there's going to be a new beat of cops on this section. I mean, they're switching their beats, so that means all the, and what the rumor is these cops that they're putting on this beat can't wait to get at us. I mean, that's kind of some of the comments they
So we need to get some videotapes here.
I think so, yeah.
Good. So actually this whole incident was video, including Officer Evel's ticket of him sitting on the wall? Who witnessed the ticketing of Evel's John sitting on the wall? Gideon, Tama. What's your name for the record?
You guys were totally... No one saw you guys locked in.
Homo? Lobo. Sorry, Lobo. And who witnessed the ticketing of taking the signs? And Lobo, you witnessed that. I'm giving you that. Okay. Thank you. So a ticket for sleeping, apparently.
I don't think any of us know his name. He's been in and out.
Are you talking about, what's it called, Rock Czar?
No, not him. Someone else.
There was a man ticketed last night?
Yeah. It was about 6:30, 7 something.
And what was the, what were the circumstances? Were you witness to it?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. Well, It was the sergeant. I have his name written down.
Sergeant Baker?
Baker.
Okay. Baker.
Uh-huh. Sergeant Baker came out and went up. He came from this side, went right up to him and tried to wake him up. And
were other people sleeping as well?
No. Everyone else was sitting up. Yeah. So you got a ticket for either bedding or sleeping. I'm not sure which. Probably bedding.
Okay, see him again. Get his name. I'm gonna speak up.
He's for the new thing about staying away from the wall. He's said it before once. That we needed to keep, our stuff off of the wall. It was never away from the wall. We couldn't lean against the wall. That's amazing that that was what happened today, but it's always been Everest. Always been him doing the deed. Telling us to do it.
Thank you, Tony. Brandy, how many people got chained down that you saw last night?
Six actually got chained.
Right, and just like there were what, four in front and two in the back, or?
Two on the left side and one in the middle and
three up front near the front. Oh, come on now.
Talk sessions or
was you impressed with the
marches, but
they were there.
Yeah, and then what they did after that, after you went away, they went and marched down the street again.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it was like... I talked to Josh last night, he was impressed with the whole demonstration.
They had Margots involved and all sorts of kids, younger people involved in it.
Yeah.
Other groups.
Dogs are involved. Dogs against the sleeping dog. That's a new group.
I'm attacking a police officer right now.
Are you a local dog or come out of town?
I kind of been in California 20 years. I travel a lot.
And have you spent much time in Santa Cruz?
A little bit. I spent a little time in Santa Cruz.
I see you have a backpack on. Does that indicate a man without a permanent abode at the moment?
At the moment, yes, yes.
Do you occasionally weigh down your head here on the concrete at City Hall?
I've leaned back on my backpack.
I see you've leaned, but never fully fallen asleep, we hope. Otherwise, I would have to take you in.
Well, I have been here and chased out before, so I know better than to try to lay down.
Listen now, folks, I've been sitting here for, this is day 196 of the sleep out.
That's quite impressive, right? That's a long time.
Did you know about the demonstration last night? Five of whom are still in jail. Here's the infamous dog.
That's really good.
I found out about it this morning.
Any comments, any thoughts on this demonstration? Do you think demonstrations are effective in changing policy? Are you glad to see people here? Do you feel it's good, bad, indifferent?
I think this one is. It's interesting because it's a place to go. To get away from the abuse, you know.
It's true, although we have recently been attracting a little more abuse. Sergeant Crane just came by and insisted people remove what little food there was. And of course, a man was given a ticket for having a pile of signs. And our men were sitting where the other man is sitting right now, where Jim Carson was sitting. So. And there's a sick criminal if I ever saw one. Look at him. You. Well, we're back at the City Hall Sleep Out at 3 on the 11th, and we're talking to...
Jeremy Miller, also known as...
Blade. And Blade, you've been in jail for how long?
30 days.
On what charge?
On violation, probation, out-of-state warrant, and sleeping.
And what was this probation for?
I hit a guy in the mouth.
And how much time were you given for that charge?
I was given 2 years probation, and I had a court date. They didn't tell me anything about it. I ended up getting a warrant for my arrest when I was already out of state.
Well, I know that you disappeared one night. We didn't know what name you were under, so we couldn't track you down in the jail. How did the jail treat you?
At first, it was a pain in the butt. After a while, I started making friends and getting free food.
And a free lodging, of course.
Oh, and free lodging and everything. It was nice.
So are you now on this probation or parole still? Or?
I'm pretty sure I'm still on probation, but I'm able to go home with my family instead of going to jail.
And are you planning to sleep here, right?
No, actually, I'm getting on a bus at 3:40 to go to Portland.
Oh, so you're heading out of town.
Yes.
Well, Blade, thank you for your help with the vigil, and I'll give you some flyers before you go if you want to know what's happened in the last month.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We're having trouble finding Gideon's interview, but while we're looking, here's an interview with Mora, who was pulled over and vaporized for observing a smog check. There's been a lot of controversy in the papers in the last couple months about smog, too, the now rigorously stricter laws that penalize poor people rather harshly for having old cars. This may interest those of you who find yourself in that situation.
Mara Whitler.
And Mara, you're here with the vicious and well-known renegade Richard Quigley. Let me sit over here. Let me just tell Mitch I'm coming over to you because I was in the middle of talking to him. Here we go. Before we delve into this, I want to just make a note that Mitchell said that for a year he had a man sleeping at by his legal office. Didn't bother him at all, just wanted to make sure the secretaries were alarmed that he left before people came and cleaned up, and that would work fine. And then they had a problem because they caught him pissing against the wall or something, asked him to leave. He did. But now they've had like 6 to 10 people, and they're always causing problems, and he's concerned about that. So he finds himself more sympathetic to Lee Kornstrom's columns. Lee Kornstrom is a columnist for the Mercury News. I'm saying it's mostly for my tape recorder's benefit and for my record rather than for you, because I don't know if you know anything about this. So Mitchell was suggesting that we have a cleanup campaign to impress the citizenry about how clean and tidy the homeless are. A preposterous idea, mind you, but nonetheless one which has a certain superficial appeal. But now let's get on to real...
It's amazing when...
Richard Quigley speaks.
When I was a young guy, one of the things that my dad said to me that I found most fascinating at the time, and I've thought about it ever since, is that my old man explained to me that he'd never been hungry. Never been hungry. And I thought about that, you know, and I thought about how that might change the way that you view the world if you'd never been hungry. And I thought about the fact that here's a guy who'd never been hungry, raised a son that has, you know. And I remember when I was dealing with the legislature here a while back, and I'm sitting there watching them take away everybody's right to the roadways and all this stuff, and I had a chance to talk to them, and I mentioned this dynamic to them. But I think that's probably Mitchell Page's problem. I think the idea that the homeless should be running around cleaning up the city of Santa Cruz comes from somebody who's never been hungry.
Well, that's true, and it's also true that, you know, superficially speaking, if you're a PR man looking for ways to get the homeless activists seen in a more positive light, the idea appeals of a cleanup campaign, and we did indeed do numerous cleanup campaigns through the years. The problem is that ultimately devolves into kind of a lapdog charity type projects that you can't really do, and you're not talking about rights, you're talking about pleasing the masters, and it's not really the best way to go. Not that everybody should run around and be dirty, although I have talked about a shit-in at different times. That could be the next element on the agenda. So, talking about stirring up shit, with us here...
Stirring up shit, did I ever tell you that that's the last desperate act of a primate?
I had that feeling myself.
No, it is. It truly is. It's the last desperate act of a primate. It's said that that's how we survived all the old Stone Age stuff, is that when a primate is backed into a corner and they have nothing
Thank
else
you,
to take
it. I'll pass it on, what you said. And I'll talk to you some more if you're interested later.
And my comments on it. Anyway, the last desperate act of a primate is they'll defecate and throw their shit. Now, I really believe that when the day comes that the homeless become...
That has happened already. In fact, one woman, Joan Lee, has, after her property was stolen by police, defecated in front of the police department and smeared feces on the police department stating pig farm and shit on the police department.
Well, hooray for her, by God. I'll tell you, it truly is the last desperate act of a primate. That's just before you figure you're done.
They're way ahead of you. No, you're way ahead of them.
Well, it is the natural biological thing. I mean, it's like the fact that somebody's already done it doesn't surprise me.
Well, you're looking over a report right now, and we're sitting with Mara down here in the Cattle Prod Cafe, as I call it, so named because of its 1990 exclusion of homeless people, which we successfully protested by setting up a soup line in the hallway back in February of 1990. But that's another story. Getting on to Mara's story. Mara, what are you here for? What's cooking, and why are you hanging out with a reprobate like this?
I don't know how to answer any of those questions. Why don't you start with the first one?
Okay.
Why am I here? I'm here to find out what I'm being charged with.
Okay.
which doesn't comply with anything that I did.
Now, what are you accused of doing? What did you do? How did all this start?
I'm accused of being a protester and obstructing a police officer.
How tall are you?
5 foot.
And how much
you lie? Your mom says you're 4'11". You're just trying to make yourself look bigger than you are.
No, I'm like 5. Okay. I'll be 5.
And how much do you weigh?
I weigh like 120.
And do you have any karate training?
No.
It's great. This is this guy's only about 6'3".
Mr. Quigley is looking through the record.
Oh, no, this is
the summary of the police report.
This is great. Says, I was rather surprised at the amount of force it took the two of us to take her into custody.
Now, let's get back to what this is all about, because no one listening to this tape knows what we're all talking about here. What happened, briefly?
Okay, briefly what happened was CHP set up some kind of check on the side of the road, which they advertised as a survey crew, and which I was curious to what it was. And so on my way back from school, I stopped and walked up and to the setup, and I was immediately like harassed by the CHP officer, who questioned me on who I was.
You mean the officer was?
Sergeant Siebert. And he asked me who I was and how did I get here, and then he called me a sorry sight, which I asked him to define, and he was like, so anyways, I asked him what was going on, and he said a small check, and I asked him like how he picked people, which was arbitrarily, and I asked him if the people had a choice or whether or not they had to participate in the smog check, and he said they did, and I asked him if he was telling the people that, and he said that he was. But none of the people, like, could leave from the smog check area. And they were
How do you know they couldn't leave?
Because I didn't see any of them get to leave.
Did any of them indicate a desire to leave, and then were they restrained from leaving?
Or? Yes.
And under what circumstances was someone restrained from leaving?
Well, the way that they approached the car was that two men came up to each window, which was very intimidating. And when they talked to the people inside the car, and the people inside the car, you know, put up some kind of, they didn't want to be in it, then the officer Siebert came over, and then he talked to them, and then they were convinced to stay. But the people were, like, really shooken up and worried.
Did you talk to any of the people?
I tried talking to a few of them, but they were just really, like, scared and stuff. So, but I just wanted to find out if he was telling him that, or just what he was saying to him in the car, which I was not allowed to do, and which led to my arrest.
Was your car legally parked?
No, I was walking.
You were walking?
Yeah, I was just walking.
And did the officers at any time tell you you're interfering, you have to leave?
No, not particularly.
So give me some more kind of, let's zoom in on the point at which the officers actually either arrested you. Is that what happened?
Yeah, although I didn't know that he was arresting me.
Okay.
So he started the confrontation by...
Sergeant Siebert?
Siebert, yeah. He started the confrontation by when the car came up, the guy asked him to, he pulled over a car, and the car came up, and I approached it to listen to, like, what was saying. But before, like, I even barely got to the car, he ran up from, like, 50 yards away and slammed into me and started pushing me back.
So now, you had a previous contact with him?
No, that was my first contact with him.
So he rushed up to you and just started shoving you?
He, like, chest-bedded me. He started pushing me.
Had some desire to, should we say, engage in a sort of a sexual mating ritual?
For
did
him?
You find him attractive?
No.
No?
No.
Forgive me for asking.
No, but I...
Well, no, it's a good question, because before the movie was over, he had his hands all over her. I mean...
Indeed, was he proceeding in, should we say, what might be regarded as an inappropriate manner?
Yes, by far. Because he violated, like, my space. I didn't want to be, like, around him, and I had no wish to be around him. So, anyways,
he touched you inappropriately.
I feel so, yes.
Just
because of his mannerism of walking up to someone and slamming into him, it's not something that I would choose to do.
Okay, so he slammed into anyone. Then what happened?
And he started, like, pushing, like, right here on me, repetitively, like, pushing me back. And, I was just trying to talk to him. He didn't have, like, very much of a method to what he was trying to say.
Did he say anything as to why he was pushing at you with his... You're poking me in the clavicles, what you're doing, right below the clavicles.
Yeah. No, not particularly. He didn't have very much of, like, an argument, you know. He didn't... he just kept pushing me back. And, like, I was just trying to tell him that I wanted to, like, listen, you know, and he wouldn't let me listen. And he said that I needed to stay on the other side of the white line, which I complied with, you know.
How far away was the white line?
And the white line was, like, about 3 or 4 feet away from the car, so it's kind of a hard distance to be able to, like, listen.
And how, where was this? Where did it all happen?
On Soquel.
At what point? Where on Soquel?
Between Cabrillo and Safeway.
Okay, any more exact description of the nearest cross street? Or?
No.
Okay.
Well, there's one in the report.
Is there?
So the continuing the officer, the sergeant then, after having needled you back a bit, what happened?
Well, location. Southbound Soquel Drive, 300 feet north of West Ledyard, LEDYARD, in Aptos.
Okay, I have no idea what that is, but imagine it's near the highway somewhere.
No, it's on Soquel Boulevard between the El Rancho Shopping Center and Cabrillo College.
Okay.
And they just blocked the whole side of the road. What they did was they blocked one lane off completely, which is why I went down there. I heard there was a roadblock, and roadblocks, the criteria for roadblocks is fairly stringent for those people that are interested in complying with the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I simply went down, although I'm being called a protester, I went down as an observer, and I guess observer and protester are interchangeable when you're a bureaucrat, but I was an observer. I was the one that jacked the cop up. I'm really the reason that she got in trouble, but it was unwitting and unknowing, and she didn't know about it. It was.
Why don't you give us a description of how you saw this, when you came upon it, what happened?
What I did is I was going over to have some coffee. Her boyfriend.
Ex-boyfriend.
Saw me and mentioned to me they had a roadblock going on up the road, you know, and of course I have an interest in this type of thing. I called a friend of mine who's an investigator and has video equipment and stuff like that, told him they were doing roadblock. I wanted to go up and conduct an investigation, see what was going on with the roadblock. So he came by and got me, and we went up there and parked on the other side of the highway from where they were at, and I walked across. And Sergeant Siebert was sitting in his little car there, his roadblock, and I walked up there and kind of stuck my head in the window. How you doing there, Sergeant? What's going on here today? You know? And I was interested specifically in two things. One of them, the most important one, is how he picked which cars came in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it seemed to me like it was fairly capricious. It was like, it wasn't every 20th car. Arbitrary means every 20th car. Or pardon me, random means every 20th car or every 50th car or something. Arbitrary is what I was afraid we were dealing with, which of course is exactly what was going on. Anyway, then I asked him, well, what happens? What happens if somebody just flips you off and keeps driving? What are you going to do then? He said, well, if they don't try to run over me, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so they don't have to stop. They can just keep going. Oh, yeah. You know, there's no law. Oh. Okay, now I'm thinking about this dynamic, and I'm thinking, now, I know what I would do. I would flip them off and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently some lady did that earlier in the day, and we'll have to get a hold of her because she was apparently charged with trying to hit him with her car.
Mm-hmm.
So there's somebody else facing charges on this, and we'll find out who she is. But anyway, that's part of the discovery deal. Anyway, so I asked him, okay, well, you know, how do you decide which cars? How does that work? And he wasn't real clear about that, so I thought I'd hang out and watch. And so he wanted me to go away.
No,
Mara wasn't even there, see? And so he wanted me to go away, and I sort of, you know, excuse me? No, I don't believe I'm going anywhere. I believe I'm going to stand here and watch. I may be a witness in a federal action. I don't know what you guys are doing, but what I'm doing is witnessing what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me if I didn't leave, he'd have me physically removed. And of course, when anybody ever gives me an or else, I want to see the else. And it was like, well, get on with your bad self, Sergeant. You know, you get you guys down here and you physically remove me.
Mm-hmm.
So he called a couple officers in and they rolled in. One of them, a veteran cop. He was the first one that arrived.
About this time I had arrived.
Yeah, this is about the time she showed up when these cops started showing up. So this second officer rolls in, and he's a veteran cop, but my guess he's a good one. We'll have a chance to find out. Anyway, Siebert went over to him and started talking to him, and his body language clearly indicated he did not want no truck with me. Like, you know, you're in this by yourself, son. You got no ground. You know, you might want to go fishing or something. Okay, the next thing that happened is that this guy Lob rolls in.
Who is a CHP?
CHP officer also. And he was...
How do you spell that?
L-O-B-B. L-O-B-B. Lob's sort of a jerk. But anyway, Bob rolls in, and he's standing over there, and I'm watching the same negative vibe, except he's not coming over and messing with me for a whole different set of reasons. I mean, it's clear that he wants to. The first officer clearly didn't want to. Lobs clearly wanted to, but he wasn't going to step off the end of that particular pier, if you get my drift. So
by this time, what was happening with you, Mara?
Well, Mara showed up. Yeah, Mara showed up, and we're sitting there talking. They had this little, it was kind of a little...
Now, had your communication with Sergeant Siebel been before this?
No.
Hadn't happened yet?
No. Okay. No. So there's this little area they have set up with a little tent, a little canopy covered with some chairs sitting under it, and while they were stealing these people's cars and sticking them on their machines, they were supposed to be, I guess, sitting in that area. And I was, chairs were empty and it was shady and comfortable. I sat down, you know, and Mar and I were sitting there talking, and he came over and told me Siebert, mm-hmm. come over and told me I couldn't sit there. That area was for just
citizens.
The people that were being...
He said it was for citizens.
Yeah, for citizens.
Well,
way.
We know you're not citizens.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I got up.
You didn't have your passport on you, did you?
No.
No proof? Okay.
So I got up, moved out there, and kind of stood next to the thing, you know, because what I wanted to do was interview the people that were having their vehicles tested. I had a chance to talk to one guy, and I asked him what he felt about it, and he felt inconvenienced. Yeah. A little bit on edge, but he figured it was probably pretty necessary because we all need clean air, you know. You get the high moral justification for the tyranny. Anyway, I moved out of that area. Anyway, that was about the time that the car pulled in, and Mara decided she wanted to see whether her questions would... She dealt with Siebert. She talked to him. He started it. That's what it was. When I was moving out of the chair, yeah, I was moving out of the chair to get away from there, and then he started talking to her about what she was doing there and all that. She just walked up, she told him so. And then he said something about her being a sorry sight, which struck me as a little odd. You know, you're a sorry sight. And they turned around and walked away. Well,
so this was your first contact with Siebert?
Yeah.
And he, in essence, came up to you when you were sitting in the chair? Or?
Yeah.
Now, did you two know each other previously? Yeah, you did. You knew each other previously.
Who, me and Elmara?
Yeah, you two.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I watched this guy do things to her body that I've been wanting to do for 5 years. You know, I just won't. But apparently what you got to do is get a badge, then you can cuff them, then you can grab their tits, you know. Anyway.
Candid friend here. I, of course, would have never had any such designs.
You lying ass.
Fibbing.
Anyway. I mean, you know, you don't have to be a male chauvinist pig or even a little bit sexist to be attracted by this little beauty she's a little. But anyway, back to the story. So,
you want to punch him out, I will step back.
So, he's
very flattering.
Mark grabbed the story and go from here. What I did was I got to watch. The first go-around I watched, and he was pushing around. I'm sitting over there. I'm over by his car. I'm completely away from where the inspections are taking place. Just watching.
How far away is this from the inspections, Brian?
150 foot, probably. Okay. I'm standing there just watching what's going on. I watched him push her around over there, and she sees it sort of like her little brother, you know, bothering her while she's trying to do the dishes. I mean, she's just trying to look around him and stuff while he's pushing her backwards, you know, and he's not communicating. I can tell that he's not talking to her. This is not professional cock stuff.
So you moved Mara from a seated position with Richard to stand it?
Because he picked a car and it pulled in, and so, like, I went up to listen to it.
At that point, he began shoving you back.
No, and then, like, when I went up to listen to it, the smog technician had a problem with me being there, and that's when he ran up from, like, far away and slammed into me. So when he was pushing me, I was, like, asking him, like, kind of basic questions and telling him that he didn't really have any answers, like he's saying. He just was, like, pushing, and no matter where, like, I stood, I couldn't stand there. And by that time, the car left, and I never got to hear what they said.
What was the problem the smog technician said he had or she had with you?
He just couldn't stand there. That's all.
Were you blocking the smog technician's view of the car?
No, not at all.
No.
Were you interfering with his looking under the hood?
No. They hadn't even gotten to that part yet.
Did you have your hand over the odometer?
No.
No, she wasn't doing anything. In fact, they accused her of yelling at these people, and she didn't do any of that either. And by the way, this first situation where the guy come up and just out of nowhere just pushed her back away from the car, this one we have on videotape, okay?
Who was videoing it?
A friend of ours. Anyway, my investigator friend. He's going to remain nameless because he's an investigator. I mean, you know, that's his job. Anyway,
But he left before the arrest came. The second one was the violent one, when the next car came in. I mean, she finally gave up on hearing what was being said to this first couple. And then she came over and we talked for a while, and then eventually another car came in. And when it came in is when the arrest took place, and it was shortly after it came in. And by then my photographer was gone. So we do not have the arrest, and I wish to hell we did. They say we do, and I wish to hell we did, because we'd have made some money on that. The news media would really want to see two full-grown men slamming this poor little girl around, down to the, I mean, first against the car,
yeah,
and then down to the ground, and they're not saying you're under arrest, you know, put your hands behind you, we're going to handcuff you. They're not saying anything.
Who are the two officers who did
this? Siebert is the one who convinced me. When the second car came up, then I approached it, and I stood, like, behind the white line that he, like, had instructed me to beforehand, even though it was a closed-off lane, and it clearly wasn't endangering me. And I stood, like, parallel to the smog technician, so I wouldn't be in his way. And, like, he scooted in front of me. So I'd scoot on the other side of him, and he scooted in front of me. And then Siebert came up, and he repeated his first actions of, like, he said... he started with pushing, and he said, like, he wanted me to stand behind the line of cones, and I told him that I was doing what he asked me to in the first place, and he's all, no, you have to stand behind the cones, and they're like, I asked him why. I said, well, I'm not in the lane. He's all, I can make a lane anywhere I want. So, and I'm all, but I can't hear. I'm all, I just want to hear what they're saying. I'm all, I can't hear from that distance. And he just, like, it was evident after a while, no matter where I stood, it wasn't good enough.
You attempted to move to the cones?
I attempted to move, and wherever I moved, he'd push me. He'd, like, I moved to the side, and he'd get in front of me and push me.
But you didn't move to the cones, as he requested?
It was too far back.
Right. So, Richard, did you hear the conversation this big?
Oh, by then I was down there, and I had... By then I would say down, and I was far enough away not to be interfering with what was going on, but close enough so I could hear what was going on and see.
And your investigator had left?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was gone. I didn't even notice when he left, which was
how much
just,
of the time a gap elapsed between his filming and this incident?
5 minutes, maybe.
Too bad he left.
Oh man, I mean, you just cannot imagine. You cannot imagine, because when you read the police report, we'd have them dead. They'd be dead. The lies just would be the tape would uncover it. Now, fortunately, there were a lot of witnesses there to what happened.
And you've been able to contact those witnesses?
No, but we will now. Now that they've filed charges, we can start by discovery. And what we'll do is we will get the people that were stopped in the smog check, who were inside the vehicles, who witnessed this whole thing.
How many people are there?
There'll probably be about 5, maybe 6 witnesses. There were a couple, like Rosemary from the radio station, KSJO or KSCO or whoever they are. Now, she's trying to make the cops look good.
I don't know why.
But when we start to question her about what the details were, I think what she's going to have to do is that she'll tell enough of the truth that she'll move away from her original try to make the cops look good.
I don't know she will tell the truth, because after all, she does have a position to maintain.
Oh, no, I do understand that whole movie. She is a lying bitch.
I like Rosemary personally.
Well, you might. I think she's a piece of goddamn garbage myself.
Just on this particular situation?
No, I've never much cared for her. In fact, if I were to tell you why it is that she spoke unfavorably in against Mara's position, if I gave you the line on that, it would blow your mind.
Blow my mind.
John Sandich, who knows probably less about me than anybody on the planet, hates me for what he thinks he knows about me.
He also hates me, by the way.
Okay. But for what he thinks he knows, he hates me. Now, he doesn't even have anything to deal with. He just does. And he went down to KSCO and spread that poison. So Rosemary hates me because John Sandich hates me. So she has even less of a foundation than he has, which is none.
Mm-hmm.
So he's resistant to telling the truth about what happened to Mara,
mm-hmm,
because John Sandich hates me. Now, you tie that one all together in some path that doesn't look like you.
Michael Verling doesn't like John Sandich either, so it all kind of works together. Sort of a mutual hate society for him.
I think those people need to get involved in one great big group sex thing, you know, and tell their kids
something. I will refer this to you at this time. So again, let's follow this a little further. You attempted to, again, look at this most recent instance. Sergeant
Siebert blocked your view, pushed you away. Richard was within hearing distance. Then what happened?
I was just trying to talk to the officer, like, calmly about the situation and, like, how I played into it, but he was just violent, and at one point he grabbed me by the arm and he pulled me and then let go of me, and then shortly after that, he slammed me against the other person's car, and he just kind of, like, shoving me around by the arm, which I was going with because I had no need to, like, fight him or anything.
Did you see this, Richard?
Oh, yeah. He had her by her left arm, had it twisted, and just kept, first he slammed her into the car by steering her by her arm. And then when she careened off the car,
the car being smogged or his car?
Yeah, the car being smogged.
Right.
And then it was off the rear portion of the car, and so she slams up against the side of the car. And I thought rather, you know, healthy and abruptly. At which point, if I'd have been him, I would have thought he would have let go.
Right.
And I'm torn because I want to save her, but I know I can't.
Right.
And so then he, without letting go of her arm, she careens off the car, and the next thing, you know, she reels back about 25-30 foot across and away from the car.
Still being held by the sergeant?
Yeah, oh yeah, and
yeah,
driven.
He's just like
he's driving her, driving, pulling and pushing by the arm.
He wasn't twisting my arm and putting me into like an arrest mode. He was just like pulling me one way and pulling me another way, and I was just going with him because I didn't know where he was going with it at all.
So then she went down. And when she went down, he started twisting her arm and he's putting cuffs on her. Now, he does not say, he never says, I'm arresting you. He never says, would you please not resist? He never says, would you not resist? Okay? And it was, I think as close as they got was take it easy, take it easy. She's not yelling. There is no visible resistance. Okay?
I
know is that there was two of them down there trying to cuff her up, and we got a statement from the cop that says that she was surprisingly difficult to subdue. And I would think, yeah. Little 5 foot Mara Whitler was
and
probably
a skirt and like a shirt, like it was like a long dress, and like a long skirt with like thongs on. And so when he like pushed me to the ground, I was on the ground already because of like where he's doing me. And then he's like lay down on the ground, and they like wanted to take my keys, and I'm all that's fine, I'll give up my keys, but can I hand them to someone I trust? And that wasn't good enough for him, so they like slammed them out of my hand and left him in the dirt. So then they escorted me to the car rather abruptly, and they had me stand outside of it for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden Mr. Siebert decides that he wants to search me, so he took me and he said turn around, and I turned around and he pushed me up against the cop car again.
Hold it right there.
Okay.
So let's get back to this. He were about to be searched, and then tell me, he pushed
you. Yeah, well, he said turn around, which I did, and he slammed me up against the cop car, and then he proceeded to. I know it's like hard to put it in a way because he proceeded to like search me, but
did he search you or was it fondling?
Well, he grabbed like my breasts.
Like, breasts.
Yeah, like repeatedly, like one, two, and like
above the clothing.
Mm-hmm, and like he like grabbed them and like shoved upwards on them, and then he like patted my stomach, and then he came again for my breasts.
So he did this twice.
Yes.
And did you object to this?
Yes, I did, and then I said this is trippy, and I don't feel like.
By the way, that's an inappropriate question for me to say. Did you object to this?
I think
what you were doing, you were asking if you were stating an objection is the way I heard your question.
Yeah, that's right. How I heard it too.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, no, she did not get up that morning so she could run down and have some cop cuff her and grab her breasts. I know, that's not what it was about.
But I had a good feeling about it. And then he said, instructed me to spread my legs, which I did. And then, but he took his knee and shoved it into like the upper top part of my thigh. And like creating them open more, and then he patted down the inside of my thighs, and then I was put in the car.
This is Sergeant Siebert.
And I was standing there just absolutely like a deer in the headlights. I knew I couldn't do a damn thing except make it worse by trying to stop him. At the same time, I'm watching this young woman being violated. It's probably the first time in her life she's ever been subjected. For the actual search, the only hope that we got was we're hoping that the good cop that was there will do the story. But you know, I don't know at what point that women are allowed to call a rape. But it seems to me that the worst unwanted sexual experience of a woman's life should properly be entitled rape.
Well, any kind of, this sounds like a sexual assault.
That's clearly in my mind, and that's what we intend to sue for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what the definition is, it's obviously a violation of your integrity, your privacy, and your bodily safety, also your psychological security. You're obviously suffering from this.
Well, I just think it was unnecessary. I mean, well, to be arrested, number one, and to be legalized, but then to ask him to search me. I mean, I told him that they asked me if I had anything on me. I didn't have anything. I could see clearly from my clothing that I wasn't carrying any weapons. So I just think it was unnecessary.
What I can't figure out is that my understanding that male police officers could not search women. When did this turn around? Where was I when we lost that part of gallantry in our government, man? I mean, come on.
Well, what we need to do, you found out, have you called the California Highway Patrol and asked them what their procedures are?
Oh, no, we're going down today to pick them up. We're going down to pick up internal affairs complaints. We've been waiting to get the charges and see what the reports were and find out what was said before we started on everything. But no, there will be a full wall of complaints filed, thorough.
Anything else you want to say about what happened to you subsequent to this?
Subsequent, that means afterwards?
Right.
Okay. Well, I think everyone's got to be clear on their terms, because otherwise we're all going to fuck up, and assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. So,
Assumption's the mother of all who?
Fuck-ups.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the word, sorry. I guess when she gets ready to be potty mouth, she talks fine.
So you were taken away in the police car?
No, anyway, so I was put into the police car and was known in there, and I had to remind them repetitively to, like, pick up my keys. I kept losing them. They placed them on top of the CHP car, and they proceeded to get in to drive me away, and I had to remind them to get them. I'm like, look on the top of the car, and he's like, what? Well, my keys are on the car. So he grabs them.
Sergeant Seaman?
No, Loeb is escorting me to the CHP office. Rob, excuse me. And they took me down to the CHP office and held me for an hour to try to figure out what they were arresting me for.
And then they released you?
No, then I had to, like, kept asking them to take me down to the county house so we could get on with this. And they finally took me down to the county house and stuck me in a holding cell for 4 hours.
At what point did they tell you that your charge was?
At the CHP office.
And what was your charge?
148.
Which is?
Obstruction of justice.
Failure to obey a lawful order of a...
Yeah, which I argued, and I told him that I didn't, like... Well, actually, he showed me, he got out of the penal codes of wrong year, 1983, which, and he read me what I was being arrested with, and it was, like, it wasn't obstructing anyone, it was basically pushing an officer, mm-hmm. And I told him that I didn't do that. And he's like, well, you're going to stay here until you understand what you did. Because this is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get breakfast first.
The brain machine will start at 10.
So then I was held in the holding cell for 4 hours, and then I was released with no bail. And Richard and I haven't been brain involved in my lawyer's name.
Very well. Got a great case for you, baby.
Going to explain to everybody why it is that it's okay for them to steal cars over this Smog Check 2 thing. They're having a justification for Smog Check 2 at 6:30 at the center over there.
Now, what center? What?
I don't know the name of the damn
Monterey center. And that was Richard Quigley and Mara, who are fighting police abuse and the right of citizens to observe what the government is doing. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This has been Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides with Robert Norris. That's me. I'll be coming to you again as soon as I can get another tape to this station, and hopefully you'll be able to help Free Radio Santa Cruz find a new home. They are looking for a place to broadcast from. Give a call to 423-4833. That's 423-HUFF. If you have any comments on this show, any ideas for Free Radio Santa Cruz about where they can locate, or any thoughts generally on homeless rights that you want broadcasted. Until then, stay with us, or rather, I'll be back with you for another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Mm-hmm.
We shall not be moved by the tree that stand by the water. We shall not be moved. The Union is behind us. We shall not be moved. The Union is behind us. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that stand by the water. We shall not be moved. Young and old together, we shall not be moved. Young and old together, we shall not be moved. And like a tree that stand by the water, we shall not be moved. Our colors united, we shall not be moved. Our colors united, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree standing by the water, we shall not be moved. Gain straight together, we shall not be moved. Gain straight together, we shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water, we shall not be moved. We're fighting for our dignity. We're fighting for our dignity. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water, we shall not be moved. And we're fighting for our children. We shall not be moved. We're fighting for our children. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water. Cause we want a union contract. We shall not be moved. We want a decent contract. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water. We shall not be moved. No, we shall not. We shall not be moved.
On earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one. For the